I miss a green, for example, I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Today we are joined by international sensation Patrick Newcomb. Patrick is one of the few golfers to win on two continents this year. He just finished up his season on the Mackenzie Tour, which is the Canadian Tour. He finished fourth on the money list, and that earned him his web.com card. Earlier in the year, he was playing on the Latin American Tour, or the Narcos Tour. Patrick, welcome on.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So you're out in Portugal for this the Portugal Masters on the Euro Tour, huh?
Yeah, this week got a sponsor invite, first one I've ever gotten. I couldn't even get one in Latin America or Canada when I was writing for him when I had conditional status. And so it's cool to be able to show up and not have to Monday qualify.
Yeah. What's it like playing for like 8x money? Or it might even be more money, like for the first time.
No, it's nice. Yeah, I think it's 2 million euro purse this week. So that's a lot more than me playing crazy good and shooting 19 under like I have in Canada and win 30K. So
it's good. I mean, you deserve it. You have 3 wins this year and in a couple of different places. I mean, a lot of great golf. And I think you've risen in some internet fame. You know, we saw you win one time and it was like, whoa, this guy's got this bucket hat on. And then you kept popping up, winning more and more. So I'm curious, how and when did the bucket hat, you know, revolution start?
It started in Springfield, Missouri, Monday in a web event. My brother always had this big bucket hat, and he was like, I want to wear Strix on. He was a Nike guy when he was playing, so he just had a Nike one. So I got him a Strix on bucket hat out of the van, and he was wearing it, and I was like, that looks pretty nice. Like, I've been trying to get one, thinking about getting one for practice, and I wore it when I was practicing, and it felt pretty good. And then, you know, I went out and I wore it in Argentina, talking to my buddy. I was like, I think I'm going to wear the bucket hat this week. He's like, dude, you can't wear that out here. And I was like, I think I'm going to wear it. And I shot 66, I think. And it just kind of stuck after that. It was, everybody was like, that bucket hat looks bad on everybody, but it looks good on you, Pat. And I was like, I don't really know how to take that, but I guess I'll take it as a compliment.
I've got a bucket hat, and that's the exact thing my buddy says. Dude, you can't wear that bucket hat. I wore it recently because of my wedding to keep the sun off me. But I'm curious, does your bucket hat have one of those like little strings that go down?
No, I couldn't do it with that. It would be dangling when I'm hitting, and so I couldn't deal with that.
Yeah, that's not...
just this straight up.
I gotta figure out what to do with mine because it's got like that string. Sometimes I put it behind my head, sometimes I put it in the hat, but I'm thinking about just cutting it off. But then, do you ever run into problems with the wind? And it
so mine fit me really good. I guess my head just fits universal bucket hats really well. I don't know, but it doesn't ever. It'll like flip up, but it doesn't ever. Rarely does it fly off. A normal hat flies off more than a bucket hat does. So I don't know why, but I guess it's just perfect.
You're born for the bucket.
I guess that's what it is. I guess that's what it's telling me, that I was born to wear the bucket hat. And then the bucket hat on top of the pleated pants is just pretty much takes the cake, so.
Hey, you know, like all things, like, you know, cargo shorts, I guess, are like back in style now, and they were out. everything's coming back, so, you know, pleats probably are going to come back, so, you know.
I don't know. I guess we'll see. I don't know. Everybody's like, Pat, you gotta get some real clothes, man. Like, those aren't real.
I mean, you've made some money now, so you can afford to invest some, allocate some capital to the clothes, or we gotta get you a clothes sponsor.
Yeah, no, that'd be the first thing I need is a close sponsor, because even living the life that I'm living, like this trip over here to Portugal, was just, I just couldn't wrap my head around how much money I was spending to get over here to play. But this week I'm playing for way more money than I've ever played for, so it's, I guess it's a double-edged sword there.
So this week you're, you know, you got the bucket hat. You're going to be rocking the bucket hat with arguably, you know, this era's most famed no-hat player, Robert Rock, who's just got mad flow game. You know, it's going to be a pretty stark contrast, huh?
Yeah, I actually don't have the bucket hat this week. I actually left it at an event. I've actually been naked with the bucket hat for a few weeks now. I need to get them to send me one. I have some at home. As soon as this week's over, it'll be back in play. But I left it at a host family's house in Calgary. But it'll be interesting to play with the flow game. I can't keep up with that. It's his flow game's has been really nice for a long time, and he plays in Europe. So with the wind, it's just like it's perfection out there. I don't think I can keep up with that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. You know, Robert Rock, the flow hasn't deteriorated with age at all. Like, there is no receding hairline there with him.
Yeah, I was walking on the range on Tuesday to hit, like, 5 balls, maybe, before I went out, because I'd slept, like, 3 hours on all the flights out of London, the Tour Championship, to get London, Ontario, to get all the way over here, and then flew to London, and then flew all the way down here. And we're walking on the range. First guy I see on the range that I actually recognize. And so I nudged my buddy. I'm like, the flow game. I literally said, the flow game. And he looks over and started dying laughing. And it was Robert Rock just hitting balls. And then, of course, I get paired with him right after. Like, I get the pairings come out, you know, the next day, and I'm paired with him. So it's just really funny.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot to be said about having, like, a trademark look. Like, I think, like, basketball players make so much money because they're the most marketable, because you can see their whole face. Fans are on top of them. But with golf, like, you know, outside of the big superstars, the big top 10, like, you remember guys because of, like, specific things. And, you know, it can't be contrived. Like, the bucket hat just happened, you know? So yours is the bucket hat, but, like, Rock has the flow. Obviously, you know, there's definitely a marketability factor, and it's good for fans because, like, you know, fans recognize those types of things. Like, the casual fans, it's easy for them to pick up on. You mentioned your brother used to play, you know, I'm curious, how did you get into golf? I saw you grew up in Kentucky, and, just like, how did you get started with the game?
I had a club in my hand when I was, both my parents played lots of golf. My dad picked up the game at like 26 and was a scratch handicap by the time he was 30. So he was just really picked up on it fast and became a really good player, and a real natural player, like hadn't taken a lot of lessons, had a crazy swing, like big hop in his swing and all kinds of crazy stuff. People used to make fun of him, but he used to beat everybody. And so I just had, he chopped down little clubs when I was real little. I'd play in the sand if I wanted to play in the sand, you know, bunkers and whatnot. And, you know, it's just, I was always around it, and he never really forced us into it. He just said if I ever really wanted to start playing, though, just like any other sport, he was like, I want you to take it serious. Like, I mean, if we're going to spend the money for you to go play these tournaments, I don't mind it, but you're going to take it serious and do what you're supposed to, you know? So it was like, it was a little bit more intense than, you know, kids just go play in all these tournaments and visit their buddies. He was like, you're there to play well. And that's kind of how he's always been, so... I've kind of had that with me my whole life, and so I've been around the game my whole life, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. In terms of since you know, nobody listening to this has probably gone to a Canadian Tour or Latin America Tour event, but that is something I do want to go cover a Latin America Tour event sometime. I think it's a missing frontier of golf media.
I guess you could say that.
tell us about your style of play. Like, what's your game like? You know, is it, you know, if you were gonna compare yourself, I don't know, just break down your game.
I hit it really straight. people say, you know, well, there's all kinds of, you know, people say, well, this guy hits it really straight. My buddy was telling me the other day, he was explaining to his uncle when we were in Ottawa, my buddy that caddies for me, his uncle's from Ottawa, and he was like, what's his game like? And he's like, it's hard to explain, he just hits it really straight. Like, I don't really understand how to say it, he just hits it straight. And, you know, he was just saying, like, his uncle was saying, I don't even know what that means. Like, you know, lots of guys hit it straight. And then he got up and I was hitting balls at his course one day off and I was hitting them. And he just looked over at him. He goes, you're right. It's just, he just hits it straight. The ball doesn't curve at all. Like every shot just kind of just is dead straight. Like that's kind of how he plays. And so I hit it really straight. I have a lot of control of my ball. Mm-hmm. And I'm a streaky putter. So if putts start going in, I hit a lot of greens. I hit a lot of fairways and a lot of greens. And, you know, if putts start going in, it's if you're hitting the fairway and the green on every hole and you start making some putts, you know, that usually adds up to some pretty low scores. So,
yeah, I mean, it's when the putter gets hot, I'm not anywhere near your level of play. I'm a good ball striker, though. And when the putter gets hot, it's so much more fun. Something I kind of believe in now in today's era of golf is that kind of great ball striking, like in good ball strikers, is a prerequisite. And it seems like it having won a couple times and being in contention a lot, does it really come down to the putter most weeks and, you know, who makes a couple extra putts?
Yeah, I think it does. And I like to play courses that separates players to hit it well. Mm-hmm. And in Canada, the thing about Canada is fours are good down there, good up there, and the players well. But I hit a ton of drivers, so I hit a ton of drivers, even on really tight holes. That's a strength of mine, so I take advantage of that. And I'm hitting a lot shorter clubs in than a lot of guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because guys are hitting three woods or hybrids short of bunkers or in the to stay out of the tightest areas, and I just hit driver on every hole just to hit it. I hit it up in the tight areas that I'm not worried about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I hit short clubs. So for me, I think at the next level, from essentially from everyone I've talked to, that the weeks you make putts, that's the weeks you win. But I think there's a lot to be said about that because, you know, there's a lot of guys that, you know, have struck the ball. Very rarely do guys strike the ball poorly and win on tour. So I think it's more to be said about how well you hit it from the fairway more than it is about making putts, because if you're hitting it to 30 feet on every hole, statistically you're just not going to have a chance to win. So yeah. I think it's more about the approach. Tiger was the greatest there ever was at proximity to hole, you know, on his approach shots. He, late in his career, he wouldn't even hit in fairways. He was hardly hitting any fairways and, you know, was still winning golf tournaments because he was still hitting it to 12 feet in the rough. You know, so I think the biggest part of the game in winning is the second shot.
Yeah, I had the USC assistant coach on like last year, and that's something he said, is that the skill they, you know, really work on to try and develop guys for the next level is the approach. And I mean, shorter birdie putts you're going to make more of. In terms of, you know, kind of preparing for the next level, obviously this week you've got, you know, the European Tour is second best tour in the world. Where do you think you need to do the most work with? Is it the wedges and putting, or is it, you know, where do you see kind of taking the next steps and continuing to improve?
The wedges have been a question mark for me, which is, it's funny. There for a while I could hit a 7-iron closer than I could hit a wedge in stretches, which didn't make any sense at all. But that's kind of my game. I hit a lot of mid irons close and even longer clubs close. And I really revamped my wedges this year, and the wedges have gotten a lot better. So this week you're going to hit a lot of short clubs and scores are going to be low. Guys are going to get a hold of this place, from playing it. And, so this week it's just about dialing in distances, for me from anywhere from like 170 down to 100, which is pretty much every week for me. If those are dialed in as well as I drive it, I'm going to have tons of looks, and I'm going to have one day where I roll in a bunch of putts, mm-hmm. One or two, and that'll give me a chance to win on the back nine on Sunday, which is all I look for every time I tee it up. Is everyone's like, you know, I want to win the golf tournament, but it's not so much about winning the golf tournament as getting the work done, you know, the first 60, 63 holes. And when you tee off on 10 on Sunday, you got a chance to win. You might be three back or whatnot, but you can't ask for much more than a chance to win on the back nine on Sunday. And so that's kind of my motto.
Yeah, I think that's an aspect of golf that goes overlooked, is just it's just the same way as getting birdie opportunities at a bigger scale as getting winning opportunities. You know, you got to be in the mix, because the ball's not going to go your way every time. But if you're there a lot, it's going to happen more often. In terms of the wedge revamp, I'm always curious, because one of the things I find interesting with golf is sometimes, like, what makes a great driver swing and a great driver of the golf ball can be counteractive to a great wedge player. Is it something you did technique-wise to kind of revamp the wedge game?
Yeah, my brother had changed some stuff around in his wedge game, and had spoken to a few people and kind of got, I guess you could say, got his body out of the shot. Took his legs and his upper body out of the shot, and was pretty much just hitting wedge shots with his arms, which was more of a control. You can control the distance better. You can control a whole lot of different things. And I've always hit shots with my upper body, and my arms were almost non-existent. It was turn and turn. And that's so much harder to dial in a shot at 82 yards or 75 yards or 60, 63 yards, weird numbers like that, where you need to hit it within a yard or two and online and control the spin. It's a special art. Like, that's why most of the time, the guys that hit the ball the shortest off the tee have the least amount of rotation in their body and strength, so they have more control over the shorter shot. That's how they hit their normal shots. So that's kind of what we did. We kind of took my body out of the hit, and we were kind of hitting with my arms, and really got my arms swinging freer and not swinging with my body. And, I started doing that, and wedges started coming off good. The spin was the same every time, and it really changed everything for me, actually. I won in Honduras, but I hit 7 irons in every green in Honduras. It was the craziest thing, but... But after that, that's what's helped me play so well and consistent in Canada and have a chance a lot, because, I still make plenty of birdies with 7, 6, 5, 6, 7 irons that most people don't, and then I have a lot of good looks with wedges, and it's just been really good.
Yeah, a good recipe for golf is drive it well and wedge it well. I mean, it travels well. In terms of, you see it with, like, international players that come on to the PGA Tour, like a perfect example is like a Siwoo Kim. But you're doing the same thing as an American right now in Portugal, and then, in the spring in Latin America. What's it like, and how much tougher is it to play golf in a foreign country where you don't speak the language and, you're kind of traveling there, you're unaware of the culture, the surroundings, it's a new style of golf. Like, how much, how difficult is that, and was there a big transition period?
So over here, no. The best thing that ever did happen to me in my career is I went to South Africa my second year as a pro. And I went to Q School, and I got status on the Sunshine Tour. And without getting me that status, I was there 5 months straight. If I got status, I was going to play the whole first half of the year till the summer, and then I might fly back after the summer and finish up. And I was there, I flew over in January, and I came back in late May, early June. It was about 5 months, and that was the best thing that ever happened, to deal with being away with nobody. I went over there with nobody. I just went over there and just figured it out. And doing that, I think that just made everything easier. So when I went to Latin America, it's annoying not speaking the language, but it wasn't a big deal for me. I just knew how to get around. And so it makes a big difference. So I think, really for anybody to go away and to play in another country, it makes it so much easier, makes you so much more comfortable. Like, when I was playing in Canada, it was like a breeze. It was like life was easy. It was like the craziest thing. It's more difficult with the language barrier and the cultures, but it's when it carries over into your game and you're just like annoyed the whole time you're there. you just can't, when you step away from all that stuff and you step on the course, it's like a sanctuary. That's the way I kind of look at it. It's like, I don't have to deal with anything. I just deal with, you know, hitting this white ball that I do all the time and getting in the hole. So that's the kind of way I approach it, which makes it a lot easier. It's like, I'm excited to get to the course so I can get away from all this nonsense.
Yeah. It's on the golf course, and none of that stuff matters. It's interesting. I imagine that the experience right out of college, really, you know, second year is in South Africa, it forced you to grow up. And I think one of the more underrated aspects of professional golf is learning to be an adult at age 23, travel and be alone. So, you know, how was that adjustment period being in a foreign country for 5 months? Alone, like, you know, what'd you do? And
it was a pretty good setup when I was in Johannesburg, where I was staying. I wasn't far from the course, and you know, there's a couple restaurants that I'd gone to like my first week there, that and I kind of stayed in my little bubble in Johannesburg. But like going to like Zimbabwe and Zambia and seeing all that, it's just crazy. It's crazy to see those cultures and experience those things, and it was really eye opening, and it made me appreciate what I had so much more. It's funny, I was on the plane back, walking on the plane, and people had to just hate me because I was just I literally was about to get on the plane. I was so happy. I started chanting USA walking onto the plane when I was about to fly out of Johannesburg. And then when I landed in London, I had a layover. And then even in London, I was like, this isn't what I like. This is not home. I don't know what this is, but it's not what I want. Mm-hmm. And I started chanting it again on getting on the plane again in London, like walking, like after I got my ticket, walking down to the tarmac. I was like, I can't wait when these 10 hours are over. Like, it's going to be the most amazing thing in the world. Uh-huh. And I was just so happy when I got back in the States. And just, you just couldn't even imagine. Yeah. And that's what made me, you know, appreciate what I had at home, and, you know, just everything, life. I was so much more appreciative about life and just everything that I was doing, you know, getting to come home and even being in Latin America. If I go for 3 weeks, I know I'm coming home. Mm-hmm. So it's even easier. Like when I was gone for 5 months, I mean, that's a long time to be in a place where there's some beautiful things, but there's a lot of terrible things going on over there. And it was, for me, it was amazing to experience those things, and you know, and hopefully my career keeps going, and I only have to experience those things in small doses from now on.
Yeah,
not in large doses like I did before.
Where you'll have like an end date, unless, you know, if you go out and win on the Euro Tour this week, you know, that'd be a good problem, right? Because then you'd
it'd be a great problem to have. And they go to the nicest places, like the European Tour events that were in South Africa were at the nicest courses. I played the whole time I was there. Uh-huh. So it was like, you know, they go in and it's royal treatment, and it's super nice everywhere they go. And you know, it's not like the Sunshine Tour, and it's not like Latin America. And you know, Canada was an amazing experience, but everything's always amazing when you're playing well, and any golfer knows that. You always like the golf course. You go play some rinky-dink muni that's in terrible shape, and you go out and shoot 67. You're like, I like that place.
Yeah.
You know, but if you can go play a perfect golf course, shoot 80. You're like, oh, that place wasn't that nice out there. Like, it wasn't that good. That's just golfer's nature, I feel like. So you know, that was with Canada. It was funny. I was playing well, but it was, so I was like, I was always happy the whole time I was up there. But it was nice to get home. And this week, you know, I guess just hopefully I get hot and play well, and then we move forward. I mean, I'm week to week. I've been week to week for about 20 weeks now, because I didn't expect to stay up in Canada as long as I did. Mm-hmm. So
with the Sunshine Tour and going to places like Zambia, Zimbabwe, like, and you're traveling with your golf clubs. Did you not have a caddy at the time?
No. I just picked up a local jock every time.
What's the between Latin America and Southern Africa? Who had the better caddies, and you know, who's the most memorable looper you had?
Most memorable. I got a few. I got the guy that I won with in Honduras. this year, Carlos, is one of the funniest guys I've ever met, because he literally, he thought I was hilarious, because we'd walk, there was these promo girls, and we would walk past them, and I'd, every time, he would, like, go get a drink or whatnot, and I'd, like, nudge him, and I'd be like, that's you, get in there, like, go talk to her, all this stuff, and he just thought that was, he barely spoke any English, he just thought that was so funny. So one time, he thought that I like nudged him, was like, go talk to her. And he thought, no. And then he went and talked to her. And then he came back and handed me a phone number. And he goes, it's her phone number. You wanted her phone number. I said, no. I said, it for you. So from then on, every person, every time we went past the tent, he would go talk to him and get a phone number. And it was the funniest thing ever. That's probably my favorite one. And that was the first year I was in Honduras. And then he caddied for me again this year in Honduras. And it was funny because we won. And he was like, he's been sending me messages every week, like, let me come caddy for you and all this stuff. but Carlos was funny. And he was also the only one that didn't ask for a big tip after the week was over. The only one of all the places that we went to.
So do you get a bigger tip because of that?
Oh, 100%. Always.
Yeah.
That's always.
It's an amazing thing. If you don't ask for something, usually it works out better. In terms of the numbers, I mean, did you call any of them?
No, I chatted with one of them during the week of, but it's like crazy because we're on this resort, and then all these people that are working, you're getting bussed in from, like, miles and miles away to work, and then they bust in early in the morning, and then they stay to the end, and then they get bussed out. So it's just the culture and everything. And I definitely wasn't gonna about to get take like a 45-minute bus ride in the middle of nowhere in Honduras to go see anybody. I teetered on the edge of bad experiences in South Africa, and I wasn't gonna do that again in Latin America. So
yeah. In terms of like the diciest travel situation you've been in with, like, you know, your clubs, or, you know, is there any time where you were like, whoa, like, what the fuck am I doing?
So I met this girl in Nicaragua. This is be a good story. This will be good. I've only told my buddies this. But I missed the cut in Nicaragua. And this is one of the better stories. And I went to watch my buddy tee off, and I was sitting there, and I'd practiced that morning, and that afternoon I was just having a couple of drinks because I couldn't change my flight. We were going to the next week, so I went to go watch my buddy tee off. I was gonna watch him walk a couple of holes, and this girl was working this tent, and I had a drink, and we started chatting a little bit. And then she was like, you know, you're from America. We chatted, whatever. I walked away. And then the next day I came back to watch my buddy come through there, and she was there. And she goes, what? She goes, when are you leaving? All this stuff. She's like, you should come with us, me and my friends. Your friends should come. So I was like, okay, I'll go. My buddy had to play the next day, and he's like, I can't go. So I was like, all right, whatever, I'll go. I don't have anything to do. So we pulled Nicaragua. We were literally on a resort in, like, a weird place in Nicaragua where it was, like, really out on the ocean, like, exclusive, you know, really secluded. And so we're driving out, and I think we're going to take a right the way we came in on our shuttle. We take a left, and the road ends. And it's like a gravel road kind of thing. And it's like a road, but it's not really a road. And there's no lights. And I'm just, like, thinking, I'm literally, like, we're driving, and I'm thinking, oh, well, something's going to come up soon. And we get about, like, 5 miles, like, off, like, down. I'm like, well, Pat, you made a bad decision, and you're about to pay for it. Like, you made a poor decision, and you're about to pay for it. You can't really get mad. You really can't even get mad. You know, you made a decision that you should never have made to leave the resort, and you're about to pay for it. It's bad things are about to happen. I don't know what is going to happen, but bad things are about to happen. And I was like, you know, I'm like, okay, stay calm, like, you're fine. Like, I was, like, looking around, I was asking him a bunch of questions, like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, whatever. And it's so funny, as soon as, like, I'm asking, like, guys, I think I need to go back to the resort. Like, you guys can, like, you guys mind dropping me off back at the resort? And we pull up on this beach, and it's this, like, this amazing view and this, like, nice restaurant and, like, just, like, this super, like, nice place. And it was just funny because the people I was with was just laughing at me. They were just like, "You thought we were gonna kidnap you, didn't you?" I was like, "I thought something really poor was about to happen." Yeah. To be honest. It was fun. We ended up coming out on this beach and having dinner, and it was fun. But it was that was probably the most uncomfortable I've ever been in any situation for about a 10-minute stretch.
So did you go back to the resort that night?
Yes, I did. Oh. Yes, as soon as dinner was over, I went back to the resort. I was ready to get back to the resort, and I haven't done anything like that since. Oh, so that was a good lesson learned.
I think you should have doubled down there.
maybe a younger pet would have doubled down, but that one will always be etched in my memory for sure.
So having played on both the Mackenzie tour and the Narcos tour, in terms of like the experience like of each, like how would you kind of compare the vibe and the guys down on each and just the overall, like what did you like and what did you not like about each experience?
The best thing about the Narcos tour, which I think is funny that you call it that, it's pretty good.
Tron Carter, No Laying Up Guys creation, so I can't take full credit for it. Right.
The best thing about that is because you're in these places where there's a language barrier, and the Latin guys all have their crew, and they're super, and like their culture is super friendly, so they joke around with everybody and all of that. So those guys are awesome too, because I've met a bunch of them, and a bunch of them think I'm a crazy guy and all kinds of stuff because I've told them stories like that and other things. And so those guys, that culture is great, and they know like the ins and outs. But the Americans that are down there, you're it's kind of like a brotherhood, like you're kind of together because you're kind of secluded of the culture, and you don't speak the language that well, and you're all kind of getting together to get an Airbnb and like, hey, where'd you stay last year? Was that safe? All this stuff, and it's just like it's more everyone looking out for each other. Mm-hmm. Down in the Narcos tour and the Mackenzie tour, everybody, it's just like playing a mini tour event, and it's not, everybody's not, there's a bunch of nice guys up there, guys are nice, but it's not as tight as the Latin tour. Like, I love the Latin tour, I love playing down in Latin America because just everybody's so tight, and it's just a great experience, and guys are fun, and you can experience a lot more things. Canada was more, it was more like business, like it's actually felt more, even in the web events I played, it felt more like a tour event down in Canada with just the culture. Like the PGA Tour, it's not really like buddy-buddy. It's not, it's everyone has their own little clique or their own little, they have their agent and, all that stuff. That's kind of how it felt in Canada. More like everybody was, did their own thing. Everybody was nice and passing and practice, but Latin was, it's like a brotherhood. It's like a good group of guys. And in Canada, it felt more like super business-like, and mm-hmm. and guys weren't as friendly and weren't like working together like it was in Latin America.
Yeah, I imagine, because there's a lot of guys down on the Latin America tour that play that for like a, that are from South America and Latin America, that play it for like their profession, like that's their thing, right?
100%. They don't go to the expensive weeks. Like, you never see them in a week it's going to cost them a lot of money to go play. Never see them there. And so it's crazy to see that, and then there's a lot of great players down there that play down there every year and know all those courses and stuff. And in Canada, it seemed like it was a bunch of 22-year-olds, 23 guys right out of college, hadn't done, the travel and the professional lifestyle at all. And it's important to play well and it's important to work hard, but like my mentality is like, if I'm happy and I'm excited to be there and I got a good crew with me, like I'm going to play good most weeks. And, mm-hmm. I've traveled the world and I've done a lot. And a lot of the younger kids that I met up there were just like, it was like for dear life. Like every week mattered so much and every round mattered so much. It just had a different feel than these, like you said, these professionals down, literally their profession was to play Latin America and finish, 30th on the money list to make money, like for their family and like do the whole nine, and everyone up in Canada was, really, really driven to just really get to the web app. We're like, oh my, but I got so many buddies out there that I've played against that are already out there. I got to get there now.
Yeah. It's like the Canadian Tour is like an extension of college golf, where it's so serious and it's, you know, training versus, I mean, the Latin America Tour, like, I mean, you're never going to go down to imagine an event and there's going to be like a gym nearby that you can go like pump weights in right after your round. It's just such so much different of a vibe, and it's probably so helpful because it teaches you so much perspective. I think that's what gets lost so much with, golfers is the perspective of playing golf for a living. Like, it's pretty damn awesome, especially if you can be successful at it.
No, it's everybody. It's I'll be saying, I'll be talking about this or that, and I'll be bitching about something, I'm sure, at some point. My buddy's like, dude, like, just let's switch. let me come hang out in Latin America and play golf, and you can come sit at my desk job. And I'm like, and I always say it. I'm like, everything's relative. So you should always know that, like, anyone, you can be uncomfortable in your setting if it's relatively, it's different than what it normally is. But I said, I had the greatest job in the world. I wouldn't change it for anything in the world. I was like, but it's all relative, to whatever's going on. And I said it to my buddy, like, I was like, no, I'm still going to complain about something if I want to complain about it.
Yeah.
But I mean, I have the greatest job in the world, which is nice.
Yeah, it is a sweet gig. I complain a lot sometimes to my buddies about what I do now, which is this and write and stuff, and they're like, dude, are you kidding me? Like, I'm like, well, like, you know, there's, but yeah, I love what I do way more than what I used to do, so it is all relative. What's like, in all of your travels, what's your favorite spot you've been, whether it's in South Africa or South America, Canada. I mean, your passport's got to be just littered.
I got to get new pages. I just looked. Like, I could literally about to fly out here soon. I got to make sure and check whatever the regulations are. But, like, I could literally about to fly out and they'd be like, you can't fly out. You don't have enough pages. Because I know that's like a regulation, and I'm getting very close to that. So, actually, after I get home, if I get a little stretch off, I'm going to have to get some new pages in my passport. Probably my best spot, my favorite spot. One of the coolest places I ever went was the first tournament I went to. It was the Dimension Data. It was in Fancourt, South Africa. It's still a background on my phone. And it was three courses there, and it was just one of the most amazing places. It was awesome. I played terrible that week. That's why I remember it still being so amazing, because I didn't play good that week. I missed the cut, and I still remembered how awesome the place was, and that's never the case for me. That is probably my favorite place that I've been. But probably my favorite golf course that I've been to was probably Ocean Forest in Sea Island, Georgia. That's probably my favorite track I've ever played. They're at Cherry Hills in Colorado. So, but the place I've ever been was probably Fancourt, South Africa.
That's cool. I want to get down to South Africa sometime. I mean, I think I'm years away from doing that. I got some other places I want to check out, like Australia. You should try and play in like that Australian Open. That'd be cool. Or PGA.
If they ever give me a start, I'll be there.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it is.
You are definitely I don't think anybody will dispute that you won't travel. Will travel is a very apt term. So now that you got your card locked up, I know you're gonna try and get some sponsors and exemptions and work that game. What else will you play in? You're kind of you're in no man's land, I feel like.
Yeah, I might, depending on what sponsored events I get. I'm really excited. The PGA Tour is by far, hands down, the best tour in the world. I know everyone knows that, but it's just not even close. It's unbelievable out there. It's the greatest lifestyle in the world, and especially as a golfer, it's just, you just play amazing tracks week in and week out. and they chase the best weather too. You never play in bad. You notice how there's never bad weather on the PGA Tour?
Yeah.
Like maybe like 1 week a year, and it's a weird storm where there was like high winds and the highest wind records in years.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
That. Like there's never a bad weather ever on the PGA Tour.
It's, so, they just came to Chicago, and September is the best golfing weather here.
Mm-hmm. No, hardly any wind. Perfect. Just sunny. No humidity. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's amazing. So I would love to get PGA Tour starts. That's the next for me. Is, you know, I've been writing, and hopefully I can get get some starts. I went out to the after I won in Honduras. Not that I have a lot of money or anything, but I actually had told my buddy I was going to come visit him on the 3 weeks off, visit him for a week, and he lived out in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And so I won in Honduras, and I changed my – so I'm literally supposed to call in the morning, tour travel, and change my flight from back home out of Honduras to Vegas. Forget. In the morning on Saturday. I make the cut on the number this year. I go out, and I'm in the middle of my round. It's funny. I think I'm at like 5 under at the time. I'm in the middle of my round, going to 9T, or maybe 10T, and I'm like, oh my god, I forgot to change my flight. And the only thing I thought about in the whole back nine was you can't forget to change your flight because tour travel most of the time isn't open on Sundays.
Yeah.
I was like, I have to call them before, like when I get done, like I have to do this. And it's all I thought about in the back nine. I went around there and shot 61. And took the lead, and then I have to do a bunch of, and I have set the course record, and I have to do all these interviews, and at the same point, I was sick that most of that week. It was the craziest week ever. I was sick all week. Like I literally didn't play. I played like 1 9 holes practice round, laid in bed all week. It's unreal how life works. And so I'm like, and then I have to do all these interviews, and I'm like, well, I want to go hit a few balls after these interviews, and I forgot again. I want to go hit a few balls and like groove this. Like I'm gonna win tomorrow. I'm gonna have a chance to win tomorrow. I go hit balls in the range, I'm putting, and my buddy walks up to me and he goes, you changed your flight? I'm like, oh my god. I run back to the room, call like 4 minutes before tour travel closes, change my flight. I go on to win and spend a week out in Vegas. That story leads up to me playing TPC Summerlin, and I love that track.
Uh-huh.
I absolutely love that track. It is built for me.
Yeah, it's not too long.
It's not too long. It plays firm and fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I hit a lot of short clubs in, and the par fives are kind of narrow, and the greens are kind of quirky, and I hit long clubs well, and it's built so well for me. I tore it up all week long when I was out there, and so I would love to play in the Shriners Hospital. That's like the one that I really want to get in in the wraparound season.
We got to give this man a spot, you know?
Yeah. It'd be amazing to be able to get out there and go play. You know, I was out there all week, and I might almost move out to Vegas if I ever get to a place in my life where I can, because I love that track.
Where do you headquarter now?
On off weeks here lately, I've just been flying to wherever a buddy lives and like practicing there instead of going back to Kentucky, because my coach is there, but we can send videos, and there's not a lot I can get done at home. In Kentucky, you know, I play at Benton Country Club at 6,100 yards, no driving range. I've played it a billion times. Like, you know, it just doesn't show what I need to work on, really.
Maybe you should try. I always say this to my buddy. He's my four ball partner, and he plays at this course I grew up playing at, which is, I mean, you can hit driver everywhere. Yeah, like I can go out and shoot under par in my sleep. I always tell him, like, why don't you play with just a 5 iron and under? So then you're hitting like all different clubs into the greens, you know, and I mean, obviously it hurts that you don't get to work on your driver, but all of a sudden you're hitting like 7 irons into greens that you've always hit wedges into.
Yeah, no, I actually, that was the next thing I was going to. Like, I played that place with, you know, no woods. I played that place with, you know, one time I played that place with 7 iron down.
Uh-huh.
And played it 7 iron down and played it as a par 68. Played the 7 iron down and put the fives as fours.
Uh-huh.
It was crazy. My buddy was like, you can't shoot under par. 7 iron down and par 68. Or it might have been 6 iron. It might have been where I could hit a full shot into the par threes. Whatever club I needed, I think it was a 6 iron, where I could hit a 6 iron to the middle of the green. Like, it was a back flag. I was just I was stuffed. But whatever I could hit to the middle of the greens on the longest par three, that was the longest club in my bag. And played them all the fives, and I shot 67. I shot one under, actually, doing that. And but yeah, the course is just so easy. I know it so well, and I just can't.
Yeah.
Like, it's cool. That's cool to do, but like my strength in my game is my driver.
Yeah.
And I want to hit drivers. Like, that's what I work on, because my driver is, you know, I'm not short. It's not like I'm super short and I have to hit it straight. I'm decently long, and I hit it straighter than most guys that my length or longer hit it. So I can't really work on that stuff.
Yeah.
So I just kind of fly to wherever. I was in Jacksonville on my last week off, and
it's got to be nice that you get the practice and play at the TPC courses. It probably helps a ton with traveling around.
Oh yeah, I mean, I always fly in when it's a TPC course, or I spend my winters in Orlando. I have a place there down at Reunion Resort. They're good to me there, and I can go in there and practice in Orlando. So, you know, wherever there's a TPC. I spent my birthday in New Orleans, actually, right before I flew to Argentina for an event in the Gap there, the first week back after I had won. And my buddy bought me a flight into New Orleans. We went out in New Orleans, and I was out practicing at the TPC down there. It's nice that, you know, if I wanted to go somewhere and need to go do something, I can always find a place to go practice, which is good.
Do you guys get access to the private ones, too?
Private
ones. Like the private TPCs? Because I know some of them are private clubs, in a sense.
Like because
Boston is a private one, and I think I don't know where else they've got a handful of privates though. So
there any of them that are on the list, if you're a member, they just usually you show up, and especially the ones that aren't Sawgrass or Scottsdale, you show up and you are, because a lot of times there's might be one other guy out there, you know, like if you go to Boston. Or, you know, Summerlin, like you go out there might be four guys, and they literally set you up in a locker, give you a locker and everything, first class. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, so being a country club member without any of the dues, right?
100%. Well, you pay plenty of dues paying the PGA Tour for Q School, so yeah. you pay, and the travel, you're paying dues, just so you know.
Yeah, so you'll play Q School this year. And obviously that's a big event with status, right? Just getting the higher priority.
Right. So I'm going to get a few starts. I could get anywhere from 3 to 8 starts. I could get all 8 off of my status out of Canada, possibly, because it's changed a little bit this year. But if I go to Q School and win Q School, then I'm a full member. I'm in everything.
And it's 50 grand.
Top 10 is like 12, I think, or something like that, or half the year. You know, and then top 45 gets the first 8 no matter what. So you're playing for 50K. You know, it's more money than I've been playing for all year. So it's like, you gotta, I'm definitely not going to pass up on a chance like that. And those first 8 on the web.com are just so important.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And a lot of them are down in your comfort zone, down in Latin America.
Yeah. It's pretty good. That was the main reason I went to Latin over Canada, actually. You have a little bit better status if you play down there and finish in the 5, because every Latin America start you're in, no matter what, your number doesn't have to get called. Like, you're automatically in as through sponsor invite for those Latin America starts if you got in the top 5, the Los Cinco down in Latin America.
So
it's better than Canada a little bit.
You're in the Los Cinco right now, right? If it ended.
No. I'm like, I think I'm like 11th now.
Uh-huh.
So I fell to like 11th.
I mean, it's never happened before, but what if you went down there and played and you were top 5 Los Cinco and Canada? I feel like that should get full exemption.
I feel like it should too, but it wouldn't. Knowing the PGA Tour, that wouldn't happen. So, I would just play out of whatever category was better. And it'd be funny because probably if I do go deck down there, something crazy happens and I win again down there. I guess it's not so crazy at this point, but if I win again down there and finish in the 5 down there and then the 5 up there, and then I go to Q School, it could be funny. I go to Q School, and if I say I won Q School, I would just everything I did all year just really wouldn't have mattered as long as I finished in the top 10 and then won Q School, because those two category numbers wouldn't even matter. I'd just play out of my full status category. So whatever category I have the best number from, that's what you play out of. That's how they do it.
I know it's tough because there's so many web guys that, you know, struggle to get starts, but like I'm really surprised that there isn't more movement ability from Latin America and Canada mid-year. Like, I think a perfect example is Dan McCarthy last year, who won, what is it, 4 Canadian Tour events?
Crazy. He had a crazy good year.
And, you know, I think he was top 5 in the first start of the year, and he got injured this year, and I know he lost his card. So he's back at Q School, you know, 1 year after winning 4 events. But, like, it's such an interesting golf story in the sense of, like, this guy red hot, and they injured, I think I want to say his thumb, and he couldn't play basically all year. And when he came back, it was so late in the season. It's, you know, like, it's a shame because that guy, you get him up on the web, there's no question that he, the golf level of golf he was playing, like, that's going to translate to the next level. And
100%.
And it's too bad when somebody wins, like, you know, you win 3 times on the web, you're up to the PGA Tour automatically. Like, and you won 3 times on the developmental tours to the web, and those 3 wins should get you a spot up there. So
I could essentially get 3 starts next year. If I go to the final stage and don't play well, and I get my number only gets called out of Canada 3 times,
mm-hmm.
In the first 8 events, and I miss 3 cuts, then I could not get a start the rest of the year. There's a chance I could not get a start the rest of the year, and that's a little crazy, but you know, they built it that way, and your first year on any tour, you always have to play well. You have to play so much better your first year than you had to play any other year on tours. Mm-hmm. Just like the PGA Tour, you don't have guaranteed a lot of spots unless you, you know, finish number 1 on the money list, and you know, you have to take your starts and play well, and you know, once you keep your card on any tour, the next year you're in every event. That's when life gets easy. That's when you can, you know, if you have to play 40 weeks or whatever it is, you have to play every single week that year to keep your card, you can, but you have that option. You know, you don't get 20 starts, 22 starts. So
yeah, and you get to play the courses a second time around, so there's familiarity and, you know, comfort. I think that's one of the toughest things with being a PGA Tour rookie is, like, you're going to a tour and you're playing against guys that have played at a tour stop for 10 straight years, and you're playing the golf course for the first time, you know, staying in the town for the first time, and it's tough. Golf is definitely a sport. It's quite different than, like, football, where football, like, being a veteran is, like, the worst thing ever, because you're going to get booted by a young, cheaper contract. But golf, being a veteran, is extremely advantageous. You know, the one event I think you should play is Argentina Open. You could get a spot in the British Open or Open Championship.
No, that one's – I'm probably going to go down for that 2-week stretch in Argentina. That was actually where I almost – in Luján the week before that Argentine Open, it was the first win I almost had. And kind of when my whole career changed.
Mm-hmm.
Late that year, I started playing a lot better. Made every cut that second half of the year, except for 1, I think, in Latin last year. And I had a chance to win in Argentina. And I shot 73 on Saturday just because I hadn't been in that. I was leading after 2 rounds, and I just had never been in that situation in a long time on a good, you know, on a 4-round event, you know, playing, you know, on a good tour with good players. And I shot 73 on Saturday and just literally just hurt myself all day long mentally. Mm-hmm. Just was doing things that I don't normally do. And I, you know, I went back and regrouped that night. I was like, I'm going to play great tomorrow. Like, I know what I need to do. You know, my game's good. And we get washed out on Sunday. Don't even play. And I finished 10th, and I ended up losing my card on the Latin America Tour last year by like a few $100s.
Oh, Jesus.
And it was, you know, it was tough for me. Like, it was really tough for me for it to get almost taken from me. I went from leading the tournament to shooting 73 and being, I think it was 3 shots off the lead, but in 10th place.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it was real log jammed, and you know, that was a lot of difference in money. And it was just like, it was super frustrating. And then I had some family stuff happen the next week, and I missed the cut in the Argentine Open. you know, but that was kind of when my career really changed and turned. And yeah. I really felt it turning, and I knew this year was going to be a good year. I told my dad this funny, this beginning of this year, I'd never said this before. I was like, you know, I'm getting better. Like, it should be a good year. But I literally told him right after I missed the cut in Bogota by one, after I had to go Monday in because I had bad status from Q school in Latin America, I said, Pops, this is it. Mm-hmm. This is my year. It's going to be my breakout year. Like 100, I'm telling you right now, it's going to be my breakout year, or I'm going to be doing something different next year.
Yeah.
I said, like, because if, as well as I'm playing, if I don't break out this year, then I'm not going to. So, you know, I played kind of crummy for a couple weeks and next couple starts, and then Honduras happened, and then pretty much from then on, I've just been open the floodgates since I won in Honduras, and so it's been crazy.
It's interesting what you said about the Honduras win and how you were sick and, you know, how you... And I had a sports psychologist on
the podcast a couple months ago, and I talked about how, like, I noticed a lot of my really great rounds come, like, you know, I medaled and went to the semis in, like, our mid-am match play last year, and it came after a weekend I was in a wedding, and I spent zero time practicing. I think I was still hungover on Monday morning when we played. And yeah. And he goes, yeah, because you had zero expectations, like, and usually great things happen when you have this sensation of, like, versus, like, you know, being uber prepared and like, playing, you know, practicing a ton. And there's a weird thing with golf where I think if you don't, I mean, obviously you don't expect something, you go out there a little bit more free. And it sounds like that's kind of what happened in Honduras, where it probably was the week you least expected it, given the circumstances of being sick and everything.
Yeah, I wasn't feeling that well in Guatemala, and it was kind of the sickness was coming on. And I remember catching a flight, and I withdrew from Honduras, or Guatemala, because the wind delays, and we got washed out anyways. But I left so I could go get in the Monday, because I wasn't in the tournament in Honduras yet.
Oh, my God.
On Sunday. So I withdraw, and I fly in, because I was gonna have to play good to make the cut. And I fly in, and I get there. And I get in on the number, and I remember, like, when I was got there and I found out I was in, I was going to go play nine, and I was like, I'm not even going to go out there today. Like, I don't feel good. I go to bed that night, wake up the next day, and I'm just, like, can't move almost. Like body feels terrible. I hardly hit any shots that week. And I remember playing pretty good and getting nothing out of my rounds, and I was like, what a week to finally play good, and I'm sick.
Yeah.
Like I'm playing well this week and I'm sick, and all I'm thinking about is being sick, and I don't even really care where, you know, how prepared I am or anything. Like, if I could have been feeling good, I would have had a great week. I was thinking that literally on Friday in the middle of my round.
Mm-hmm.
And I make a birdie putt from 12 feet on the 36th hole to make the cut on the number and to go out first on Saturday. And that changed my whole life.
Yeah.
That changed everything. I went out first and played fast and didn't have to wait. I'm a quick player. Shot 61. That changed my life. It's funny how things in life happen. And, you know, that one thing can change the way you think. And, you know, and when I shot 61, I believed I could win. And the wind kicked up that afternoon. As soon as I finished, it was a perfect storm. And guys didn't play that good in the afternoon, the leaders. And, you know, I held on on Sunday and you know, now I'm sitting here now in Portugal at the Portugal Masters. So it's, you know, it's just a domino effect.
That's awesome. So in terms of what would you have done if you had quit?
If it hadn't have worked out this year? Do you know?
I got a buddy that lives in New York City. I got a pretty good backup plan. He owns his own company in New York City. We grew up together. He's one of my best friends, if not my best friend. And I go visit him. Like, my vacations, everyone's like, you gonna go to the beach? I'm like, nah, I'm going to New York City. I'm gonna go see my buddy, and we're gonna go out. You know, it's, you know, 10 degrees up in New York City, and we just go out every night. He knows everybody. You know, see the city. I like New York City. It's one of my favorite places to go. And he's like, has like a recruiting company, and that's where I was headed.
Oh,
I was headed to go to New York City. You know, he said I always got a spot, but
hey.
he tells me now if I quit, I'm an idiot. So
hey, man,
he doesn't know if I have a job if I quit now.
Montezuma's revenge was the turning point.
Yeah, it was It's funny how things like that happen. Yeah. And how I had a conversation with my guy roommate, Tim O'Neill, who's been on and off the Nationwide Tour and the Web.com Tour, and has won a lot down in Latin America. And I asked him, I said, what's your best advice for Sunday? Nothing crazy. I don't need anything crazy. What's your best advice? He said, Pat, stay patient. He said, you're playing great. Stay patient. Don't do anything crazy.
Yeah.
Don't do anything crazy because you think you have to go win this golf tournament. Because you don't. Just stay patient. And I stay patient all day long. And yeah, stay patient all day long and made the first time I think I'd ever gone bogey free at 3 under. Usually I'm, you know, I shoot 5, 6, 7 under if I go bogey free. And I went bogey free at 3 under par and slid into that playoff, and you know, rest is history.
Yeah, that's awesome. Patience is that's good advice for all of life. So we do a underrated, overrated segment. It's just quick, you know, we'll do like three of them. You just say overrated, underrated, and you can explain if you want to or not. First okay. One we're gonna do is the safari hat versus the buck, you know the bigger, the longer one.
Mine's a safari hat pretty much. Yeah,
it looked like it was a hybrid almost.
Maybe it might be a hybrid, I'm not really sure, but it's close. It's pretty big. It's real big.
So they're gonna be underrated. Alternative hats, I guess, is the way to go.
They're underrated.
Yeah, super underrated.
They're underrated. Yeah, it's unbelievable. They're underrated. They need more love. I don't know. Everyone's into the snap. I've been wearing the snapback just because I don't have the bucket.
Uh-huh. The next question we'll go with is food in Latin and South America?
Overrated. Overrated for sure overrated. It's the best spot's Mexico. I love Tex-Mex, but the tacos are unbelievable. That was my favorite spot of all of it. They eat too much beef. Like, it's unbelievable. All they do is eat steak at like 11:30 at night. That's all they do.
I went to Argentina a couple of years ago for like 2 weeks. It's nuts how much steak I ate.
You eat so much steak and it's really good. And it's amazing beef. And after your second meal of beef at 11 p.m., you're like, I never want to eat beef again. Like, I don't want this. Like, I want something else other than this. You can't even get chicken. They look at you like you're stupid. Like, you have 4 heads.
This is
if you ask for chicken.
That's the other thing that's crazy is, like, 11:30 is, like, dinner time.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And restaurants have to open early when we're coming to town. They'll call a few restaurants and ask them to open at a normal hour.
Yeah.
And they're like, they have to make plans when we're coming through.
Oh,
it's,
man.
It's funny.
And then, what about poutine? Overrated, underrated?
I don't know if I've had good poutine.
You're in Canada.
I would say overrated. But I had it at a club, and I was really turned off by it. I had it in Winnipeg, my first week up there. And I was like, this isn't that good. I'm not that happy with it. But I never had it anywhere else, so that was probably my mistake, honestly. I didn't have it at like a good shop, but the one at the country club in Winnipeg was not very good.
Yeah, the Canadians are going to be mad at you.
I love Canada. I'm going to give them a shout out because Canada was an amazing place for me. But I'm not all about the poutine.
Yeah, you'll get a guaranteed start. Or you didn't? Did you get a start at RBC? You weren't in the top five then.
I hadn't. Yeah, I was. I finished sixth in Winnipeg. And if I would have won in Thunder Bay, I would have got a start. And I was leading on Saturday with like 9 holes left at 13 under, the winning score. I had a big lead on Saturday, and I blew up. It was one of my more epic finishes in a golf tournament. But I imploded pretty much and finished 30th that week. My buddy still makes fun of me about it. It was just complete implosion. Just lost my mind. And so I ended up not getting that start. I thought I was going to get that start. I got way ahead of myself. I was like, I'm going to get an RBC. I'm going to win the RBC. Like, I'm killing it right now, all this stuff. And then I should finish 30th. It was so funny.
It happens to me all the time in, like, USGA qualifiers as I start thinking about, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to play in this mid-am or this USAM or whatever it is. I'm like, I start thinking about the golf course, and then next thing I know, like, I play 3 holes, 5 over, and I'm like, oh, well, it's nice while it lasted. But the one time I didn't have that happen was I ended up birdieing the 3 of my last 4 to get in, and I didn't think I had a chance.
And it was just like, I was like, it was perfect because I didn't have time to just shit all over myself.
Oh, 100%. I said literally the best thing that ever happened to me when I shot 61 was when I got to the last hole. It was the easiest hole in the golf course. 18 in Honduras is the easiest hole in the golf course since it reached triple par 5. And on the hardest hole in the golf course, I hold like an 8-footer after chopping it all up and down it when I was at 9 under. And I was like, I can shoot 59. And then I just, my head just imploded. It just exploded. And I make an 8-footer and I get to the last hole and I just was just like, just get it anywhere up around the green. And I get it on the front fringe and I'm just like, I don't need a 3-footer right now for 61. For 62. I was like, I don't need it. And I just bash it out of the front fringe from 40 feet and it goes in. And I was like, I'm so glad that this is over. I ran out of holes to mess it up. Yeah. I was about to mess it up. That's literally what I told my buddy. I said, I was going to mess that up if I had to play a couple more holes.
That's I was playing the Mid-Am, the U.S. Mid-Am last year, and I, on my second round, I birdied 10, and I was like 3 clear of the number for match play. And I'm like, all right, yeah, we're in match play. Like, shit, if I get hot Masters, like, you know, this is what's going through my head. Like, and literally the next hole is the easiest hole on the golf course. The fairway is like 100 yards wide. And I hit it in the shit. And I was just like, unbelievable. Like, you know, of all the things, I make like a double and I'm like, then I just start grinding. And sure enough, I had too many holes.
Too many holes left.
Yeah, I needed that last hole to be done. But it's funny how golf is. We'll be rooting for you in Portugal, and let us know where you're going next, and we'll be got a new person to favorite on the PGA Tour app.
Sounds good. I'm excited. I've enjoyed this. This was a cool experience, and it was great to meet you, and you know, hopefully we'll stay in touch and talk again.
Yeah, we'll tee it up in Florida this winter when you're down.
Definitely. Sounds good.
All right, man. Have a good one.
All right, see ya.
Peace.